Damn, you're getting a little too good at the Chris Collinsworth slide-ins to the show every day. For those of you who don't know and are not watching on the video service we have, Cam every day at 2:03, we're like, is he? Oh, there he is. Slides in as he hears the opening music, turns, looks at us, smiles. Chris Collinsworth-esque. I mean, it's a strong performance, Cam, but every day. It's the Chris Collinsworth slide in, man. I mean, do you practice? Do you like walk into your room at night and practice sitting in your chair, sliding in and saying?
No, I mean, I don't practice. It's just, I don't know. It's just something that's natural with me now, I guess.
But. You stressed our host out. He is like bursting and like sweats, and he's just like, where's Cam? His starts trembling. You know, have we heard from Cam today? Have we heard from Cam today? And then you pop up, and then the sunshine on Christian Gokel's face.
The relief.
Just brightens.
The relief.
The room, yes.
Well, because I like, all right, listen, we're going to talk about this overtime elite sports league that's apparently about to drop here in the next couple of years. And Cody, I love you, but you're just not the guy I necessarily go to when I'm talking about high school basketball and the current culture inside high school athletics. I mean, how many years has it been since you were in high school, Cody?
Ooh, graduated like in 07.
It's been a long time.
Man, 11, no, shoot, 7, 18, so we're going to go 14, 15
There's a
years?
Lot of math that just went on there.
14 years?
There you go,
14
exactly.
years, yeah.
But that being said, I like having Cam here because if we both just sit here and go back and forth, it'll be the 30-year-old guy perspective on it. I like having Kevin on here because we get the Kevin perspective on it. And then I like having Cam here because we get the young, fresh out of college guy's perspective on here as well. So I like the different perspectives here. Cam, have you seen the news that came out today about the overtime elite league?
No, I haven't.
All right. So you'll be absorbing this as I break it down to all the folks in their cars as well. Overtime, for those of you who don't know, and I would not blame you if you are above 25 years old and don't know what overtime is, it is a social media company where, for the most part, Cody, I've already printed that. I see you getting ready to print the rundowns there. So
I need it.
Yeah, I just got to do a little bit. You can go to the printer and grab it. Overtime is a highlight Instagram, Twitter, Facebook account, and basically what they do is they go around the country specifically to the biggest basketball games and we'll get highlights of the biggest name players. They had a ton of views for Zion Williamson and players of his caliber, right? So that's basically what it is. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all the highlights. A lot of it's submitted from kids and they'll put it up there. It's basically, if you get put up on Overtime's feed, you've done something spectacular. It's a seal of approval if you get put up on their social media. Well, they are trying to get into the, I don't want to say name, image, likeness game, but basically the game where they're trying to pull some of the money and power away from the NCAA. They are introducing the Overtime Elite League, and what it will be is a league of the top 16 to 18-year-old basketball players in the country. They're going to bring them in to either, they said, one or two cities and either move them or them and their families into those cities. And so they'll be pulling the best high school players from across America. And the key part of this is, because this isn't different than necessarily what an IMG Academy tries to do, right? If we just say it like that, they're trying to pull in some of the best players. Here's what makes them different. They want to pay those 16 to 18-year-olds $100,000 a year to come and go to this league. And very similar to like academies in European soccer, but with basketball players, top 30, 16 to 18-year-old basketball players in America is what their goal is, and they're going to pay them $100,000 a year. They're going to give them school. They're going to give them nutrition. They're going to give them an insurance policy in case they get hurt while attending the school. They'll give them an insurance policy that will cover, I believe they said, up to $100,000 worth of tuition, as well as the medical expenses, and health care will be included for the players as well. The players will forfeit high school and college eligibility. As soon as you sign on the dotted line that you are going to get or receive compensation for something like this, you are done eligibility wise in high school and in college. And so the NBA becomes the ultimate goal for these players. And that's what the thought is, Cam, is this is something for the top players in America who have a very good chance at going pro to earn money and be compensated for what they do, which are tons of views on social media. They're very recognizable in that world. They can go for 2-3 years to this league, play, go on tour, basically is what the plan is, because they're not just going to play in one city. They're going to go basically around America, around Europe is the plan, and have showcases. There's not going to be any set teams. It's just going to be the players go out, showcases. Obviously, the videos will be available online. But to me, and I don't want to go on like the moral standings where we project what our thoughts are morally about what 16 to 18-year-olds should be doing and the value of a good education. I don't want to do that. I just want to talk about, Cam, this from a business model, right? Because he has investors in this, and this, again, this is Overtime that is the company pushing this, but they have investors. Carmelo Anthony is an investor in this, which is interesting because Carmelo Anthony is one of the guys who really kind of benefited from his 1 year in college, right? Went to college at Syracuse, won a national championship, really boosted his stock, and then went higher in the draft. So I kind of thought that was interesting, but Carmelo Anthony is one of the faces of this now. I mean, Cam, to me, again, don't want to morally get into this yet, but to me, it brings up a ton of questions, right? Like, what happens to the 16-year-old who's the best prospect in the country, but then the next couple of years he gets passed by the other 29 guys there. All of a sudden, he's not a draft pick. Are you just saying, look, that's the risk you run where you've made $200,000 in 2 years, but you're probably not going to get drafted? Still got that money in the bank. You can go to college if you want to. You just can't play basketball. Like, there's a ton of different inherent risk in here. And my other question, Cam, is what's the business model? Do you believe there's a big enough interest in high school basketball for Overtime to cover, if you just go based off of what the salaries would be for 30 players, $3 million in salary? I mean, that's not including paying the teachers, paying the coaches, paying for facilities. I mean, it's going to be tens of millions of dollars every year that they have to pay. Do you feel like there is a big enough market for high school basketball for this to be sustainable?
I do feel like it's a big enough market because it's turned to social media. Like you said, Overtime is huge. Like, my best friend, he had one of his dunk clips on Overtime a few days ago. So it's huge. But like you say, it's a huge risk. Being a high school student, forfeiting basically high school and college eligibility, like, I mean, if you're a Zion Williamson, of course, you go all in on this because you're going to be a future NBA player. But if you're a guy that's kind of teetering towards the NBA or you don't know what you're going to be, do you want to forfeit that college eligibility where you get at least get 4 years of opportunity to boost your draft stock, or you get that 1 to 2 years when you're only 16, 18 years old and bet on yourself to go to the league? It's a high risk.
Cody, can you do me a favor? Can you pull up the recruiting rankings? I don't care which service it's from, just one of the reputable ones. Pull the recruiting rankings from, say, 2016, and give me the we'll just read through the top 30 guys in those rankings. But Cam, I do think there's a ton of risk involved here, and I hate to be pessimistic about things, right? Because I was pessimistic about the XFL the second time it came back. I just didn't feel like it was going to work out, but and it didn't end up doing it, but I don't want to be that guy who's pessimistic about it. So I think the inherent risk there is, do you want to be that first crop of players where you're 16? That could either be a sophomore or junior in high school. You're 16, giving up at least 2 years of eligibility in high school to go to this, and this thing folds after 1 year, right? And all of a sudden, you're a junior who could still play a year of high school basketball, but you can't because you're ineligible because you received financial compensation for it. You still have $100,000 theoretically in the bank, but you can't play that senior year. You can't play in college. And so you probably have to sit out 2 years before you even have a chance of going pro. I mean, that's a risk that's going to run. All right, Cam, I'm going to read the top 30 guys off here. And because theoretically, this is who would be the guys going to this league, this Overtime Elite League. All right. Harry Giles, 4 years later, is he even in the NBA?
I mean, he is, but Harry Giles, he didn't pan out to what he was supposed to be.
But he's still in the NBA making money, so He's a great player.
I mean, he had a lot of injuries as well.
But, so. I mean, I'm looking at this. Yeah. I mean, theoretically, Josh Jackson's up there, Jason Tatum, Lonzo Ball, Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, Markelle Fultz, Miles Bridges, Malik Monk, Frank Jackson. I don't know if I know Frank Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's just the top 10. Terrence Ferguson, Jonathan Isaac, if you could scroll down for me, Cody. TJ Leaf, Wenyen Gabriel, Jarrett Allen, Marquise Bolden, Tony Bradley, Omari Spellman, Josh Langford, Kobe Simmons, Raul Alkins, right? So it's like you see, it is kind of what it is, right? You have the top 10 guys who are pretty much, I'd say you go blow for blow there, that they were all at least NBA bench players, right? So they made it to the league. But once you get down past 10, Cam, it starts getting real hit or miss real fast as to whether or not this is going to work out versus some of these guys where I'm looking at the schools they went to, UCLA, Kentucky, Duke, Texas, North Carolina, Villanova, Michigan State, a couple at Arizona, right, versus going to school. And if you don't pan out as an NBA prospect, you're still on scholarship for 4 years, right? So, I mean, that's the question you got to ask is there enough viable guys every single year for 30 of them to get to the league?
Now, viable guys, no, it's enough entertainment to keep those guys paid, yes. Every year you're going to have.
So you think it'd be worth it, right? You think it'd be worth it if you're one of those guys who's a top 30 player to go for 2 years, make $200,000, but you can't go to school because you're ineligible because you got paid to play basketball?
If you're top five coming out of your class, I think it's worth it. The reason why I say that is regardless of what you do, you're probably going to get drafted. Those guys, for the most part, four or three out of the five, they get drafted. Now, that bottom tier of the 20 through 30, you need to start thinking like, okay, education, and then maybe going to the draft. It's a
well,
hard
it's what your goals are in life, right? I mean, and what where your values are at. But if you're a person who's saying, I want to make my money, I want to go to the NBA, but I still like want to go to college in the future, then you have to start putting the values out there, or you have to start doing the risk reward layout there as well. So if you're the 18th best player, do I go make $100,000 for 2 years to make $200K, or I have an offer from Duke, and Kevin and I were doing the math, it costs roughly $80,000 a year for an out-of-state student to go to Duke. So I make $200,000 in cash, or I go and get roughly $300,000 education from Duke in 4 years. Like, it's just, it depends on really the student, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, here's the option. They do that. They do the overtime thing for 2 years. And then the G League, they give some of the top players coming out of high school or at that age, $500K to come and just play 1 year and then go to the draft. They did that with the number one player from this year, Jalen Green. He's making $500K in 1 year to enter in the draft. So that's an option. But it's all a high risk regardless.
But that's the number one player out of high school. So that theoretically would be the number one player out of overtime, right?
Yep.
So it's that. Yep. That's not the 16th or 17th best player out of overtime. That's where I'm talking about the risk is. So, and again, I don't know how I feel about this yet. We're waiting to see. I mean, it's just a cluster right now across the country because you have states with different name, image, likeness rules versus the federal name, image, likeness laws. So you basically have states now that are, if you do it, you're breaking the NCAA rules across the country. But if you don't do it, then you're breaking the state laws. I mean, it's a cluster with name, image, and likeness right now. But that's the other thing about this that they're talking about, Cam, is it's $100,000. You get a stake inside of the overtime company itself. So that's a reason why a lot of these guys might want to go there, is fiscally you would be making money so long as overtime was a company, or so long as you kept that contractual agreement with them and didn't buy it out or something like that. But I think it's fascinating. And I think if anything, say this doesn't work out, if anything, all this is going to do is speed up the process for the NCAA to pass the name, image, likeness rules, because I think this argument becomes a lot simpler. If you're the number one player in the country and you're deciding between going to, say, Duke, or you're going to the overtime league, you're like, I can go to the overtime league and make $200,000, but I'm not going to college, or I can just play for high school and go to Duke, be the number one player in the country, get the scholarship, and I can make money off of my name, image, likeness. I think that skews a little bit towards going to college, at least for a year, right? Because again, we talk about what Melo did. We talk about, like, certain circles know who some of these players are, like Kyrie Irving and stuff like that, and Kevin Durant. You know who they are if you are on social media and you follow high school basketball. You go to a whole nother level when you become the number one prospect and you go to a Duke, you go to a Kansas, you go to Texas, just in terms of fame, because people follow college basketball who don't follow high school basketball, right? I mean, how much, Cam, do you think the stardom of some of these players goes up, the top 10 players, when they sign with the Kentuckys, Dukes, Texases, stuff like that around the country? I think tenfold, probably, for the most part.
No, yeah, it goes up. I mean, Zion, Cam Reddish, and RJ Barrett, they all benefited from that. Cam Reddish was higher than all of them coming out of high school, and they teamed up, and look what happened. All lottery picks, all starting on their respective teams, so it helps out.
Yeah, Zion Cody was super popular among, like, the high school highlights, because you just saw the craziness. I mean, SportsCenter would put him up there with some of those windmills dunks, but I think it got boosted tenfold as soon as he made his debut for Duke, and he was dunking all over people at Duke.
Blowing through shoes and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, man. If you're out there and you're on the court on one of the biggest stages in college football, I mean, in college basketball, it's going to give you a brand of your own. When, if you go to schools like that and you're good, you start becoming that brand for that school, maybe only for 1 year. Yeah. But, hey, man, like Duke, he is Duke. You know what I mean? Yes. He is the guy. His name it kind of carries on, so when he gets to the NBA, he can still kind of carry that on, you know? Hey, coming from Duke, you know, going to the Pelicans, or even like these kids come from Kansas, you know, going out there to Golden State or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, they go to these really good teams that can, the way their media does it, they've been doing it for a very long time, right. Know how to put them on a pedestal, so when they go to the next level, they're like, hey, man, they know how to deal with this stuff. They know how to freaking deal with clutch games, stuff like that. You're going to be playing like this. Is there going to be the same type of the way the games are going to be? Is it going to be the same type of crowds are going to be? Is there going to be the same type of fame that's going to be that you're not going to get whenever you don't go to college freaking basketball?
Yeah, and again, I think this will be a tough choice for those top guys, as you're 16 years old, you're the number one player in the country, and somebody's offering you $100,000 for 2 years to come there. You can still get your diploma. You'll have the nutritionist. You'll be around the best coaches. So, I mean, theoretically, you could become a better player than you would in the 2 years that you would stay in high school and make $200,000 to do it, have an ownership stake in something. So, I mean, that is huge if Overtime can find a way to continue to monetize that and continue to fund it.
To sustain it.
Right. Yeah. The other thing I will say about this, Cam, and I'm sure you agree, the most elite professional sport in the world when it comes to talking about, like, what percentage of amateur athletes actually make it to the highest level, which is the NBA, I think the NBA is more elite than any other professional sports league, right? Because baseball, you have 26 guys on an active roster, and a lot of those guys are getting rotated at AAA, and a lot of them have major league contracts, right? NFL, you have 53 guys on an active roster. I forget what, 11 or 12 on a practice squad.
Practice squad 12,
they have 80-plus on preseason rosters, right? So you go around all these different professional leagues, and it's the rosters are pretty big. NBA, what, 15?
Yeah, 15.
15 players per roster. And you have the G League and stuff like that, but you have 15 players per roster in the NBA. It's the elite of the elite of the elite of the elite. And how many guys do we see that are supposed to be the best guy in a class and just kind of flame out, right? So it's going to be really interesting to see. If anything, I think this just pushes the name, image, likeness a little bit faster for the NCAA, because they're just going to have to come to terms with it quickly. If you keep pushing against something like this, something else is going to come along to where maybe it's not going to rival you, but it can do enough damage to where it starts hurting your pocket, and that's where the NCAA is going to start getting worried. We got more to come here on Second Down. Bill Connelly put out an interesting article on ESPN+. Could an SEC quarterback be this year's version of Mac Jones? We'll dive into it when we come back right here on ESPN Radio. Welcome back into Second Down right here on ESPN Radio. Christian Gokel, glad to have you alongside. Big show coming up on 3 and Out today. Dan Matthews from 680 The Fan going to hop on with us towards the end of the 3 o'clock hour. He said he's not so sure that Kirby will bring a title to Athens. So we'll talk to Dan Matthews about that.
Really?
Also going to catch up with Bud Ellis at 5 o'clock, talk a little Braves with him. And then Georgia Southern fans, 320, don't want to miss it. Raymond Johnson, great player for the Eagles the last few years, getting ready for the draft. He's going to hop on with the guys at 3:20. So, again, big show coming up today on 3 and Out. But, Cam, I did want to talk to you about this story from Bill Conley where he's trying to make the comparison and find the next Joe Burrow, find the next Mac Jones, where a guy who had an okay year followed by a historically great year. And Bill Conley has identified JT Daniels as the number one guy that would come next in line for that criteria. I mean, his exact quote from it, long marked for greatness, Daniels is the most obvious successor in the Burrow Jones, quote, late season brilliance to full season domination line, right? And I know a lot of people have been saying that. You saw Georgia's offense go up, I think, over 120 yards a game on the ground, averaged 8 more points per game on the scoreboard in the final 4 games when JT Daniels finally got a chance to get in there and play. But, man, Cam, when you start throwing Joe Burrow's season out there and you start throwing Mac Jones out there, who just went undefeated and won a national championship, I get a little hesitant to start comparing JT Daniels to them. I've liked some of what I've seen from him, but I haven't seen anything to the level. People forget Joe Burrow, his junior year, because LSU got shut out by Alabama and they weren't in the college football playoff conversation, he had crazy performances, right, where they went to 7 overtimes against Texas A&M, where he turned into Cam Newton out of nowhere, rushing the ball for well over 100 yards and a couple of scores, and then throwing for over 400 yards against UCF in the Fiesta Bowl, when that was the UCF team that was riding that really long win streak after they'd beaten Auburn the year before. And
oh, yeah.
He torched UCF in that game. So we had a feel for what Joe Burrow was going to be able to do. We had no idea that was going to be that historically great, but we had a feel that he was going to be a pretty good quarterback. Add Joe Brady into that mix, and all of a sudden, you got what you got. But even still, Mac Jones last year, right, Cam? We knew what he had coming back. He had the best running back in college football in Najee Harris. He had Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle, all other kinds of wide receivers. Slade Bolden, throw him in there, right? I really like JT Daniels, and I really like Georgia's receiving core, but I don't see JT Daniels as Joe Burrow and George Pickens as Justin Jefferson and Jermaine Burton as Ja'Marr Chase. I think they're really good. I don't know if I'm ready to say that they're the next in line to duplicate what some of those offenses have done.
Well, you're not wrong for not being ready, because they have to prove it. They haven't proven it the last 2 years that they can do that. JT last year, He was good. I mean, he came in and improved the offense, but we didn't really play anybody to the stature of what you just said Joe Burrow played.
Yeah, you played Mississippi State with like 50 guys. South Carolina, basically the same thing. Missouri and Cincinnati. And Cincinnati, the offense did not look very good.
Exactly. And Cincinnati, that's probably where you can kind of test what he's going to be. But, I mean, Joe Burrow, like you said, he torched Georgia, too, that same year. 36-16.
Yeah, Mac Jones did too.
Yep, Mac Jones torched Georgia. So, but the comparison, I can't get mad for a person just going out on the limb just saying that, because he is bringing a lot of offensive talent back to Athens. Like, they basically bring their whole offense, and they have the best opportunity out of any team to kind of have that historic season like Alabama and LSU.
And I think, Cody, having a spring now and having 40 practices before you get to Clemson is going to be massive. And I do think you're going to see this offense be leaps and bounds more efficient than it was last year. And again, if you just say the weapons out loud, right, there's going to be so many unbelievable receivers and running backs just fighting to get on the field, right? I mean, the guys standing on the sideline for Georgia when they line up on offense would probably – or not probably, would start for 125 out of 130 FBS teams, right? I mean, you go across Pickens, Burton, Darnell Washington, Kyrus Jackson. Okay, well, you're still leaving Arian Smith and Dominic Blaylock on the sideline. You're leaving, I think, two or three other at least four-star tight ends on the sideline. If you have
– of course.
Yeah, if you have Zeus White, Zamir White in the backfield, then you don't have James Cook. You don't have – Kenny McIntosh out there. You don't have Kendall Milton, right? So, I mean, the weapons are there for Georgia. It's just, can you count on them being as historically great as Alabama and LSU? Do you believe that JT Daniels, if you have to pick somebody, do you believe that JT Daniels is that guy in college football to take that Mac Jones, Joe Burrow step this next year?
I do. I love JT Daniels. I said it last year.
How you feel about him personally.
I really wanted him to come back a little quicker. If he would have played Florida, I feel like UGA would have beat Florida last year. I am a believer
in JT
Daniels.
Coming from a guy wearing a Florida shirt with the with a Jumpman on.
I could be realistic, man. I think JT Daniels is going to be in the race for a Heisman next year. I think he's going to have an amazing year. I think Georgia's going to have one of their best chances to win a national championship next year. JT Daniels is going to go off. He is, dude, with Pickens and all that, he's, man, I think, dude, he's going to turn everybody's head. He's going to be in Heisman race. He might win it. He might win it. Like, I really think JT Daniels this year is going to take a gigantic leap. The swagger that he has, dude, and I hope he grows back the mustache. Dude, I love this kid. I love this kid.
My man's wearing, like, camel skin coats and
yes.
the turtlenecks with chains and rings on, hanging out in Athens. So he's already kind of bringing that West Coast vibe.
Hey, California
look,
kid,
Athens
yeah.
is a big-time, like, acid-washed jeans, boots, flannel shirt kind of a town.
Oh yeah,
he's bringing the West Coast swag a little bit to Athens from what I've seen so far. But I mean, Cam, the point I was trying to make, I guess, is the surrounding crew. We believe Georgia has elite players out there. We haven't seen them. I mean, again, Georgia hasn't had a 1,000-yard receiver in the history of its program outside of Terrence Edwards
yep.
in the early 2000s. Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, all those guys have gone well over 1,000 yards. I mean, do you think, Cam, that Pickens and Burton are as good or can be as good as those wide receiver duos?
No. Those are like historic wide receiver duos. But they could go by committee. I like Burton. I like Pickens. Pickens was supposed to have a big year last year. Kind of didn't after that Baylor game a year before that. But they could go wide receiver by committee, tight ends, running, but nah, those are historic duos.
And to me, last year for Georgia's offense, kind of a wash, right? You lose two first rounders and a third rounder on the offensive line, and you get a new offensive line coach. And so I thought this was one of the more underappreciated stories from last year. Georgia's offensive line play was not great in 2020. But at the same time, the guy you thought was going to be your starting quarterback opts out, what, 2 weeks before the season?
Yep.
And then you roll with a guy who doesn't turn out to be the guy to open the game. You go with a guy for a majority of the season who was the third string quarterback to start the season. Or I guess, I mean, really, if you want to put it there before Jake Fromm opted out, the fourth string quarterback. But we'll say third string quarterback for a majority of the season. And then when JT Daniels comes back, hasn't had a chance to have a ton of reps with the team. The reps that he has gotten have been midseason reps, which we've talked about before. You just don't have a chance to have the same kind of practices midseason as you do in the offseason. And we don't know that he was 100% healthy and ready to trust that knee. I mean, it had been over a year since he was actively involved in a football game. So I don't know, Cam, how much weight I put into the lack of consistency we saw to Georgia's offense last year. If they have a great spring and they're able to use everyone to their potential, do you see Georgia having – because, I mean, Alabama was the best offense in the country last year. LSU was the best offense in the country 2 years ago. If they can use this spring to really get the potential out of all of these guys, do you think Georgia could have the best offense in the country in 2021?
Yeah, I think they can, but – It all boils down to that first game of the season. If you win that, I wouldn't say smooth selling, but it will probably take a monkey off of every Georgia fan's back, and it's like, okay, we're going to college football playoffs.
They're gonna win. Watch.
This is just Cody, who's a Florida fan, trying to jinx Georgia.
I'm not gonna win.
Yeah, he's over here trying to jinx Georgia. Like, yo, no, Georgia's the best team. Yeah, they're definitely gonna win.
Oh yeah, they're gonna win a national championship next year, guys.
Curse him. Yeah, I know what you're doing over there, Cody.
Not gonna win.
You're not slick.
Slick.
You're not slick. I don't know, but you're right, Cam. I mean, really, Georgia's schedule is kind of setting up nicely for them. They can lose that game to Clemson to start the year and still go to the college football playoff. You just have to go undefeated, win the SEC, and you're in the college football playoff. And it's really three big games spread out throughout the season that Georgia, if you want to have one of those historically great seasons, is going to have to win. Clemson to start the year, which I think is a very winnable game. You have Clemson breaking in a new offense versus Georgia breaking in a new defense. Then you kind of hit a lull, but the SEC East is weak for the most part. Then Jacksonville. Got to win that game, right? Jacksonville, little bit of a lull. SEC East is kind of down. Georgia Tech is Georgia Tech. SEC Championship. Where you got to think.
Georgia Tech, he said.
They're not a very good football team. Right now. They'll be better. They'll be better. And I really missed clean old-fashioned hate this last year. They'll be better, but they're not a very good football team right now. But it's interspersed between those peaks are some pretty mediocre SEC East play, right?
Yeah.
And I think Georgia's playing Chattanooga next year. So it's, you got the big out-of-conference game against Clemson and then Georgia Tech and Chattanooga, which you should be heavily favored to win both of those games. And then the SEC championship where, I mean, I know they're starting a new running back, new wide receiver, new quarterback, new offensive lineman, but if I had to pick a national champion right now, I'm probably picking Alabama.
Yeah, I'm going to Alabama.
Like, I'm probably picking Alabama. And the defense is going to be nasty. So theoretically, you're going to have to go Clemson, break, Florida, meh, Alabama. And that's just to get to the college football playoff. So as excited as we are about this offense, and Cam, I put this out earlier on social media because everyone's real excited about what Georgia has coming back. Which one are you rocking with? Stafford, Moreno, and Green, or Daniels, White, and Pickens?
Do you know, 08, come on.
Yeah. Like, if and you, that 08 team,
you put 08 right now,
and that 08 team lost three games.
Yeah, that 08 team lost three games, but they were playing Tebow, Alabama, and all those other good teams. Like, if you put them now,
okay, you got to play Clemson and Bama again this year.
But you know, they're still in there.
But they'll beat these teams. They were playing Tebow every year, like every single year. They're not playing no Tebow this year at all.
Yeah, I like Emory Jones. I don't know if he's Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I don't know why you no. I don't know why you said that. Yeah, no.
It's like, look, those are big shoes to fill down there. I don't know if they filled them yet in Gainesville.
No.
Kyle Trask had a big season, but still, I mean, in his Heisman season, lost four games.
And you got to have multiple seasons to even try to fill up the shoes like that. You know, Tim Tebow won a Heisman at freaking
a
sophomore.
That's one of Cody's patron saints right there.
It
He's getting all like misty-eyed.
I'm about to get a back tattoo.
Yeah. Cody's getting all misty-eyed over here talking about Tim Tebow. We'll give him some time to recover. We got more to come here on Second Down after this. I did want to talk a little bit about SEC trios here, but I want to dive back in to this overtime story, Cam, because I mean, BJ kind of hit me with an interesting question there, and I don't want to answer without giving it some thought. What if you are one of the top eight players in the country and this league comes about? What potentially do you see as the downside if you go to this overtime school, which is, again, just a high school where you're going to go get your diploma and make $100,000 a year. So theoretically $200,000 a year or $200,000 in your lifetime. Or if you go there for 4 years, if you're that good coming out of eighth grade, making $400,000 and they're willing to take that risk on you, what's the downside potentially in your mind? Because to me, worst case scenario, even if you go there for a year, right? And you give up college eligibility, say you're from the state of Georgia, you give up your college eligibility, high school eligibility, you don't get drafted, but you still have $100,000 in your pocket, you still have a stake in the company, you could still go to the University of Georgia just as a student if that was something you wanted to do. Go to college and go to the University of Georgia with the money that you've made so far, right? Like, I'm just curious as to what you guys see potentially as the downside to this. And I don't think it's going to hurt the NCAA because it would be like the top eight players, if they get the top eight players, the top eight players every year over 4 year cycles, right, would be the guys that they're taking versus the thousands of kids that play college basketball. I'm curious what you see as the downside.
It just depends on the athlete. If the athlete has goals to make it to the league and make millions, and they go to this league and it just doesn't pan out, they don't perform well, things don't go right, then, I mean, it's still not a downside. You're making more money than what I'm making. 100K, 200, 300, 400K, depending on how
good
you are.
I mean, if you tell a 19-year-old they're going to make $20,000, they're like, I'm rich.
Yep. Yeah.
You're giving a 16-year-old $100,000?
I wouldn't know what to do at 16 with that. So it's, I guess you could say it's not a downside. It just depends on the athlete. That's how I just see it.
I think my worry would be, this is more of a worry than a downside, Cody, would be the inherent risk that if this company folds while I'm there, declares bankruptcy, something like that, I don't make my money, and I'm still sitting here as a 17-year-old with a year left of school, and I'm academically ineligible to go to college. Play sports.
That's the thing. It's got to be secure.
We're not academically ineligible, just athletically ineligible.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's got to be a secure thing. You can't just be like, hey, these young kids are doing it. I don't know if you're listening or not, but what Christian's saying is 100 can 100% happen. It could just fall through. Look what's happened with all the other semi-pro leagues, stuff like that. That fell through in the past, what, year?
Well, this
wouldn't
be semi-pro. This is professional. If you're getting paid $100,000 to do something,
you're
a professional.
They were saying pro. The football leagues were pro, quote, my little ghost fingers I'm using.
But they were still professional leagues. They weren't the elite.
Exactly. Well, you got to realize it's not always going to work out. Because they're never going to be that league.
Well, what makes college basketball college basketball, or what makes college sports, Cody? I told you this. If, for example, you have a junior quarterback who is a five-star, and every single fan base of every single college team, if that five-star commits to your team, you know his name, right? That five-star quarterback, he's a junior, commits to your team, he's still got a year left to play football, right? What if he decides, instead of going to the NFL, I'm going to go to this new football league where they're going to pay me $100,000 a year to go play in this league. And so instead of going to college, I'm going to go make $200,000, $300,000 to go play quarterback in this new startup league. I'm not watching that. Like, I'm just being 1,000% honest with you. I don't watch, like, college football fans don't watch the teams for the singular players. They've watched this team forever. Now, do they fall in love with those players when they come to their school, and do they love to tell the stories? Absolutely. Do you support them even if they go to other schools? Absolutely. But it's the same reason all the college football fans are saying, we don't care if you have the names and the stuff like that on the college football video game, right? It's, we want to play with our favorite school. And so that's what we're talking about with branding. You go and you get pumped up because there's millions of people who are going to watch Kentucky basketball just because it's Kentucky basketball. So it's just me personally, I wouldn't watch a league that would be amateur football with 17, 18 year olds. I don't know, Cam, are you consuming on a regular basis a basketball league with 16 year old high school basketball players?
Honestly, no. I'd rather see high school basketball in person. That's just me personally, though.
So, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and I'm sure they've done focus groups, and I'm sure they're not going into this blind, and they're not spending money like this if they don't think it can work. I just think these are the questions that we're going to have to ask about this new league, and as we see other stuff start to try to spring up around sports, like Cam said, they're already offering guys $500,000 to come to the G League for the 1 year they have to sit out of high school. Yep. But those are guys who have graduated from high school and have the decision between going to college or going to sit in the G League for a year, maybe more, if they don't pan out to be one of those top prospects. So it's a pretty fascinating decision, and I'm just curious what the business model is going to be for this company. I mean, do they try to have one piece of it? This is getting into the real nitty-gritty of it, but like, do they have one piece of it that's the educational side where it's a nonprofit and therefore you can do write-offs for the different investors inside of it, and then the actual league itself is like the for-profit side of it? It's going to be interesting to see how they set this up and where the money comes from with the sponsors. I'm sure you're going to have one of the big name apparel brands throw some money at it just so they can have that. And I mean, we see that the football league where the fans control it on Twitch. I mean, I guess that's doing okay as of right now, but
yeah, I didn't know it existed like the other day. I don't watch that. Yeah.
Well, you're about to have Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon on the same team, just wreaking havoc in that league. So it's that.
Are they going to be wreaking havoc?
I mean, it's Josh Gordon, so yeah, probably.
Josh Gordon probably will.
Yeah, so there you go. Just Johnny Manziel throwing up dimes to Josh Gordon. If that doesn't get you excited, just check it out.
He's down there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, check it out on Twitch. That's where that's happening at. I don't know. It's fascinating. I saw that this morning, and now it's blown up. New York Times has a story about it. ESPN and The Undefeated have a story up about it. It's going to be really interesting to watch, but I do think that the counterpunch from the NCAA is going to be name, image, likeness, and then how do you stand up to that? Because that has to be something that Overtime has in their plans, and the NCAA is eventually going to answer that. So how do we go about recruiting from that point? It's really fascinating, and this is definitely going to be a part of the storyline around amateurism in college athletics. We got more to come. Got to take a break. Final segment of Second Down coming up after this. Big Three and Out coming up today. Going to catch up with Raymond Johnson, former Georgia Southern Eagle, getting ready for the NFL draft. Also going to catch up with Dan Matthews, 680 The Fan, talk about why he is not so sure that Kirby Smart will bring a title to Athens. Going to look at some SEC trios, and also Bud Ellis going to hop on, talk some Braves with us as we are in the midst of spring training. All of that coming up next on Three and Out.